What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 122, The Athletic Trainer's Relationship with the Coach. We'll be speaking with Robbie McFarland. He was an athletic trainer and a coach at his previous employment. So we're going to be getting his perspective on a couple different things there and just the relationship between the athletic trainer and the coach. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right next to me is
Jose,
Shakira,
Gabby,
Jess,
Olivia.
Then we have Dr. Mark Knobloch and Sarah
Strickland
from the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program. And if Dr. Yellen was here, he would give you the website right there automatically without even being prompted. So this is the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There's the links to all of the different ways you can connect to us. That's where you can register for the CEUs on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Using hashtag DSMB on Twitter. Shakir is monitoring the conversation. There's about three people in the live viewing, so they might comment in there. Bernice should be looking at the social stream. Matthew should be looking at Twitter using hashtag DSMB. And then Bob and Leslie are taking notes, and Della is switching cameras. So without much further ado, we're going to get right to it with Jess.
Can you please give us some background and know why you're an expert on coach and athletic trainer relationships?
This one's for me?
Yep.
Am I fielding this one?
Okay. You're it.
Well, part of my reasoning to get into sports medicine was the fact that, hey, I'm not going to play college sports. That was a quick realization I had to come to in high school. I guess everybody has that dream, you know, let's go get a D1 scholarship. You know, if I'm good here, then obviously I'm going to be good at the next level. And that's not at all how it goes. There's something called an eye test that, you know, a coach looks at you and says, hey, you know, pass the eye test. Basically, you don't look anything like what we're looking for. So, and of course, y'all are in the college setting, so you know what I'm talking about there. But then it was basically, how can I stay around sports, pursue a career, and eventually end up coaching? That was actually my initial desire. And I went down to Texas A&M Kingsville and talked to them about their athletic training program, sports medicine. We didn't have an athletic trainer in my high school. So everything that I went down there and learned was brand new to me, never been a part of it, didn't come from a program. Obviously, in the back of my mind, it was to hopefully eventually get into coaching. And long story short, by the end of that, I fell in love with sports medicine. And the coach in me obviously never left. But when it came time that I graduated, one of my coaches from high school, one of the guys that actually coached me, ended up getting a job about 15 minutes away, a town called Rivera. Small school, we're talking 3A, 2A, small. And he knew I was graduating, and he knew where I was at, and he said, hey, you want to come down here? And we're looking for an athletic trainer. He said, but I'd love for you to coach too. And I said, well, I mean, everything I knew about it, I knew that'd be kind of tough, but knowing it was a small school, not a huge volume of athletes, I figured we can make it work. And so I spent my first year, I was a biology teacher, a sports medicine teacher, and I was offensive line, defensive line coach, and athletic trainer covering all the sports at the high school and the middle school there. And then, not to mention, I was a head powerlifting coach, coached softball, and coached track.
All right, so what size was this school?
It was about a 3A. I want to say total high school size, about 250 kids. So it was pretty manageable in the sense of I didn't have a huge volume of athletes coming my way, but as far as coached a lot of sports and
– But you had a nice 8-to-5 job though, right?
Oh, 8-to-5 on Saturdays. That was about it. And so that was my first year. Then the second year, there were some coaching changes, and granted, I probably wasn't the best pick for this, but our head coach saw fit to ask me to be the defensive coordinator. And basically, in an effort that he knew he could get me to run what he wanted, so he put me in that spot, not that I was qualified by any means. So here I am wearing headphones or a headset and a fanny pack on Friday night. And that's kind of where I've learned a lot of my relationship advice between a coach and athletic trainer, because I was actually dead in the middle. I was wearing a headset and wearing a fanny pack at the same time.
All right, so how many years ago was this? How many years is this for you in the press?
Let's see, I've been at I've been at Klein High School for, this is my fourth year, so it was about 4 years ago. I spent 2 years there. Yeah, 3.5 years ago, something like that.
So I'm not exactly sure, but I think it was probably about 4 years ago when the concussion bill stuff came out, right? Was that right, in place when you were there? Or was that
right after I left Rivera?
Okay.
It ended up coming out, and I knew at that point, obviously I was up here up at Klein, but I knew at that point that was when everything was going to go out the window. Something was going to have to change, but I was gone, so...
So what was your deciding factor to switch just to full-time athletic training?
Well, obviously that 8-to-5 schedule wore on me, right? You know, that was part of it. My week would be obviously a football coach's schedule with treatment still in the morning as an athletic trainer, treatments after practice as the athletic trainer. Saturdays it would be treatments in the morning, then we'd do film with the guys. Then, as a defensive coordinator, I had to stay up there and break down film and game plan for the next week, including coming in on Sundays. I knew I couldn't run at that pace forever. It was fun while it lasted. But we ended up deciding to get up this way towards Houston, and ended up that Klein was open, and it was a good time for me to get up this way, found a job, and need to slow down for a little bit. So, and to say slow down to get into an athletic training setting, that's kind of, yeah, you're slowing down. Well, that tells you a little bit about kind of what I was going through.
That's how bad it really was.
Yeah.
Okay, so how long have you been married?
Been married, I was smart. I got married in 2010. So now it's real easy to remember. So it's five, there'll be 5 years this summer.
There you go, that'll work. It's actually easier for me to remember when I graduated in 2004 and got married the next year, 2005. Okay, then I can do the
Boom.
Math. So
yeah, keep it even.
So it'd be 10 for me this summer. All right, so you got married in 2000, and was your wife an athletic trainer at the same time?
2000, yeah, we got married in 2010. And, of course, my wife and I met at A&M Kingsville, and so she knew what I was doing. She understood athletic training, number one, because she is one. But number two, she understood the coaching side of it. Because, you know, she worked around coaches all the time and that sort of thing.
All right, and so that's really, I mean, if you're talking about being an athletic trainer, a coach, you're working at a small school, where was she working?
She was at a small school about 20 miles away in, 20 miles in South Texas terminology. That's like 15 minutes.
Next door, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a little bit of a drive. So we actually lived in Falfurrias where she worked. And she worked at Falfurrias High School, another small 2A, 3A school. And she was athletic training over there while I was over in Rivera.
And she was just athletic training, no coaching?
Just athletic training. And she covered some PEs and things like that. But no coaching, no. That's all she did.
Okay. That's a pretty ridiculous schedule. And then you add in a wife being athletic trainer, and you never pretty much have time together if you're always on Sundays. And
no, you're right. And when you're buying more groceries for you to take to work, than you are buying groceries for your house, I think you got to pump the brakes a little bit.
A little bit. All right, so you kind of hit on this just a little bit, but the person that followed you at whatever school you're at, they had to deal with, they couldn't be a coach and an athletic trainer because they can't oversee. And I looked it up, and it says the person who has a supervisory responsibility may not be a coach of an interscholastic athletic team. So if you're responsible for the concussion management stuff, mm-hmm. and you can't coach a team. And I also have a friend, Tisha, she was at a 3A high school. She was like a JVB girls basketball coach or whatever it was. So she can't be responsible for the concussions of any of those kids, but she's the only person qualified on that campus to deal with concussions. How do you think that plays out there in those situations?
Had I had stayed another year, the way it would have played out when push came to shove, with the bill and concussion law and things like that, it would have taken me out of the they basically probably would have canned my athletic training side of my job and said, well, we'll let the nurse handle it. And it's unfortunate in that sense that it's that way. But I do know some other athletic trainers that hold coaching positions and are athletic trainers. Of course, they have partners that can handle and kind of take care of those concussions so they don't have to deal with those and obviously break the law. But it's still one of those things when I tell people that's what I did. Number one, they say, nah, there's no way. well, there's a way. And number two, they obviously bring up the, oh, you must have made millions in stipends. No. The stipend for powerlifting was only $500. I mean, and I was a head coach, right? So that those are the things that come up. But I know people that are in the situation that they work it out. But being by myself, where I was, it wouldn't have been that way had I stayed another year. Something would have had to change.
So they basically would have gotten rid of the athletic trainer.
More or less. I don't see them. I mean, granted, there could have been the opportunity for them to just say, hey, no, we're going to keep you as an athletic trainer, but I don't foresee that happening.
Do they have an athletic trainer on that campus now?
Nope. I was the one and only. I built the program and I left, and they had never pursued it again. Of course, they work contract deals out with actually A&M Kingsville. They have a contract deal worked out with them. So they do have some kind of coverage on Friday night, and they're just not left out in the cold. And they have two or three clinics a week. So it's not a terrible situation.
Gotcha.
So how did you handle game night? You had your defensive end went down with an injury, maybe needs taped or whatever. What was the situation for you?
And being a young athletic trainer, there are some situations, could I go back and handle differently? I was a young, impressionable coach. And by that, I mean that if my head coach said, you know, we need to make a stop here, I took it very personal. And my mind is automatically completely all the way in on the coaching side of things. And did that muddy the waters at times? In hindsight, yes. At the time, I thought, no, I got this, you know. I've got this figured out. But, you know, that kid goes down, and I've actually got a situation just like it where it was our stud linebacker. And it's Thursday. We're going through kicking game, and he's our kicker. And he pulls his quad, okay? So we got a huge game Friday night. I mean, we need him. And so I'm thinking of everything in the world to try to get him back on the field from my, you know, whatever you want to call it, knowledge of athletic training at the time was. And I'm thinking of everything we can do to get him ready for Friday night. Mind you, this is Thursday morning. And Friday night, we somehow, I mean, I've got everything I could wrap him up with. I'm trying everything I can to get him out there. And he goes through warm-ups, and he's actually halfway decent. So I'm feeling good about this as a coach. I'm saying, hey, I'm getting my linebacker. As an athletic trainer, I'm thinking like I solved a problem. So, hey, you know, we're going to kill two birds here. And sure enough, he went out and he was playing great. He caught an interception. He's running it back. He's about 50 yards into the 60 yards till he makes a touchdown. And he looks like he got taken out by a sniper. He just falls out. And so I go up and check on him, and he actually ended up rupturing his whole rectus femoris. And I had a long talk with our team doctor after that. And, of course, my athletic trainer from college, they were only 10 minutes away, so we still had a great relationship. And that was that moment where I realized this may not be the best setup. Granted, I appreciate everything that I've learned from this situation, but and you think about this as well. What about the schools that don't have athletic trainers? That happens all the mm-hmm. time. Stuff like that, the coach will do every, you know, what's the word here, like witch doctor, with the where they come up with the crazy, oh, if you rub salt on that for 3 days, you're going to be fine. And they'll try everything in the world to put a kid out there, mind you, with no medical background on it. And that's exactly probably what happened there. The athletic trainer in me was not present for that decision, and I'm willing to admit that. And at the end of the day, did I put that kid in a situation I probably shouldn't have? Yes, but he also chose to play, and his mom wanted him to play as well. Could I have stopped that? You see where it comes in, and it really makes a weird decision. Funny story I have is this ref, and of course small school reffing is even worse, if you can believe it, then.
No, I've seen small private schools. You get the newbies.
Yes, you get the newbies, and you get all these guys. And I could have swore that the ref was just completely blind to the fact that a kid kept clipping one of my linebackers. And I said, you know, I'm barking at the ref all night long. Mind you, I got a fanny pack on. So when he says, coach, you need to be quiet. I'm an athletic trainer. You know. So I'm barking at him. I'm getting fired up. And sure enough, my guy gets clipped and he hurts his knee. And as I'm running out there, I mean, I'm all kinds of fired up. I'm getting after him, you know, the ref, things like that. He's like, coach, you need to get back on the sideline. I got to take care of my athlete. I'm an athletic trainer. And so I was out there in the capacity of an athletic trainer while still giving him my peace of mind as a coach. And that happened two or three times, of course, wearing a headset. And small schools, the other teams didn't have athletic trainers, so I would go out and cover for their athletes. And, you know, I'd be out there and my headset would be on. And the head coach on our team already knew what was going on with their athlete because I was just talking, not thinking about it. And he was like, hey, that's a good job leaving your headset on. Not trying to be breaking any rules here, but hey, what do you want me to do?
They start calling you Bill Belichick.
Yeah, right. Okay. Airgate. I listened to that all the way down today. Oh, man. Right? So that's kind of – the waters do get muddy.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, it's hard enough dealing with relationships with coaches. I can't imagine separating myself. Is it time to go? All right. So I can't imagine separating myself from that job to doing the coach. So the students are taking off if you're listening live.
I mean, you were young. That's just the thing. Could you imagine doing that now? Just if somebody told you, we got a job for you, you're going to be a head athletic trainer, you're going to be a defensive coordinator, you're going to coach this softball, you're going to coach the wrestling team or the powerlifting team, and how many people are like, okay. Because you're young, it's like, oh, I get to be a head trainer,
absolutely.
You know, at this time. And then now it's like, are you serious? You know, I want one of those jobs, and you're going to pay me this amount of money because you're not the new, naive, broke college graduate.
And you'll do anything for money, right?
You know, yeah. And the problem is everybody says, well, you shouldn't take that job. Well, the problem is with the idea that, well, they need to pay you more, and they need to separate this out. The problem is there's 10 other people that just graduated that need the money. They're going to take the job, and I think it's unfortunate, but – and you gave a great example of what can happen, but it's what do you do? You know, okay, we'll just, if we won't hire you, we'll just use the nurse, you know? So it's a very tough situation to be in.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So it's always fine until somebody dies, and then, oh, hey, we probably should have had somebody.
Did you ever have to take care of somebody when defense is on the field and then they're yelling at you to get back and coach the defense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we had a system figured out, obviously knowing that situation would arise, but we had to, I remember two or three times where, you know, now I've got to evaluate a kid and defense is on the field. So one of the offensive coaches would take the call from the press box. Of course, the guy in the press box knew what I was doing anyway. So we had a system. Was it the best system? Was it most unique? And I would have to come back and say, all right, what just happened? I don't know. I don't know what just happened.
Did they score on us?
Yeah, exactly. So, weird.
So you were just, I mean, you probably don't remember anything about those nights. You were so busy the whole time. I could imagine what's going through your head.
Well, and even pregame was unique. Just coming from Rivera and coming up to Klein, you know, on game days, I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs for 2 hours because I'm used to giving my defensive talk and then my position meeting talk, then going to tape. Then coming back and taking everybody through pregame warm-up, then coming back in and handling all the little odds and ends that need to be taped just before the game, and then going back in the locker room and participating in the pregame speech and sometimes giving it, and then back on the field, lacing up my fanny pack and putting my headset on, and it was a blur.
All right, so let's transition a little bit. We're going to talk about the relationship between the athletic trainer and the coach.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start off with tell me a time. I was telling the kids yesterday when because we always practice, and I was telling them yesterday about even a time this year that I think I got it right. What happened was we had a coach at a varsity football game. You know, I'm checking the kid out. All right, well can't you tape him up? Can't you tape him up? Coach, hang on. Let me check him out. Let me evaluate him first. All right. I know I've had an ankle sprain before too. You can just tape him up. Coach, hang on. Let me do this. Mm-hmm. Let me do my job. Well, you need to make a more user-friendly diagnosis.
What?
Exactly. Okay. And so I was like, all right, coach. So then I just walked away. Just leave the kid there, walk away, and then I come back once the coach is gone because there's no reason to argue with him because that's my decision. He's, like you said, no medical background, just kind of a ding-dong. And so I think I got that one right. I just walked away, said, hey, can you do a calf raise? No, you can't go up on one foot. You can't go out there and run. You can't play.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You're done for today. We'll try and get you back next week. And so, but before, I've gotten into yelling matches with coaches.
Yeah.
Say, well, you know, like Dr. Knobloch and I have talked about several times, it was when I was young, I had to prove myself. So I had to tell you, I'm the athletic trainer. I know what I'm doing, this, that, and the other. So what I'm really looking for is a time where you as an athletic trainer and even as a coach, maybe the two of them conflicted, but a time where you really messed up the communication or the relationship between an athletic trainer and the coach?
I want to say that while my first 2 years in the business, quote unquote, in the business, were very unique and very stressful, you call it what you want. Those 2 years, I probably got the experience of somebody that had been in the business for 6 or 7 years. And maybe not more so that I got more knowledge on the sports medicine side of things, but that I got more knowledge about situational awareness, how to handle just management skills, I guess I would put it that way. You obviously have to manage your time in a situation like that. You have to manage kids. You have to work with peers and so on and so forth. So there's so much that kind of went into it there that I honestly, to this day, you know what, I did it, but it benefited me. And we say this all the time, you know, those hard times in your life, you look back, that's what makes you. And if I could take one good thing away from the situation I was in, was it made me a lot better. Obviously, number one, when it comes to that situation you describe on a Friday night, when it comes to my head coach being in my office and pushing real hard, you know, about a kid with a thumb injury, and him, you know, pulling the same thing. Well, Tony Romo hurt his thumb, and he was back the next week. Don't we all have those stories?
Yes.
Isn't that right?
I remember one, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
The one I remember more than anything is when I hurt my ankle, you know, I was back the next day, and this is the same. And I had it's just the perfect scenario for me because I said, Coach, aren't you limping and complaining to me every day about your ankle? I mean, it just
he walked
you
into
should
that,
not
did
have
he?
Said that to me, but yeah.
No, yes. And but we all, as athletic trainers, have experienced this. And the insight that I can bring to this point here is what's going through your coach's mind. And we live in a society where winning is everything, and W's and L's can decide whether or not that man can feed his family. We are above that. We are outside of that as athletic trainers. Obviously, win and loss records really don't factor into our job security. But for them, it can become everything. And I learned that in my coaching side of it. And granted, we know it, but I felt it. When I had spent some time coaching, I felt the same thing. And I know exactly how that feels to be worried, hey, are they going to keep us around if we don't get this game? So then you can see where the pressure comes from on to them. And the only real outlet at that point is they can't necessarily, and granted, I've seen them do it at times, get mad at the kid for being injured. Of course, they do sometimes, right? But you're that middleman. And so everything that they're feeling in that moment and the panic or whatever the situation may be, unfortunately comes out on us. And, you know, I tell athletic trainers and even my student athletic trainers, I said, you may get yelled at by a coach, okay? And situations may get heated. But the biggest thing you can do to stop that is to bring up the whole deal of, okay, this comes down to safety. This comes down to, are we dealing with something that if they go back out and play, are they going to go from something we can manage and get them back in a couple weeks to missing the whole season? And that's one of the things, you know, Scott Rand is our team doctor, and that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned from him is when a coach would talk to him, or even parents at times, because parents obviously do the same, they kind of get in your grill sometimes. Well, my son's tougher than that. They can play. All right, cool. But if they go back out there and they were to do this, we're not looking at a game. We're looking at the rest of the season. And when you change it up and just let them know, I've learned this also. Shouting matches really don't get you anywhere with coaches because it's kind of like when you yell at your dogs when they're barking, they think you're barking with them. And so it's
louder.
You step into their environment. Right. And on my end of it, it's just share with the coach in the most respectable way that you can that this is about their safety. And, Coach, I know you don't want that to happen to this kid, and I certainly don't want that to happen to this kid. So if you give us some time, I promise you I'm going to give you the best idea of what we can do with this. And obviously having our team doctor there to back us up, that solidifies our decisions, especially on a Friday night. It really makes a huge impact in hey, Coach, well, doctor says this as well. And they usually kind of stop right there because if a doctor says it right, you know, that's written law.
I think, too, if the coach knows you're on their side, mm-hmm. you're not doing this to spite him, or I'm not mad at you, so I'm holding this kid out, I think it helps a lot. And it's just building relationships with them and explain to him, coach, do you want him now for this game that we should win? Or do you want him in 2 weeks? Because if he's out, if he's now, or, you know, or I can put him in, but he's going to, he can't cut. So the other team's going to key in on that and they're going to run at him every time. So I'm here, I'm telling you this, but it's somebody told me something a long time ago. They said, think of the coach's mindset as if you were trying to plan an event. Everybody has job assignments to get the job done. But you're coming to me and saying, oh, I'm not going to show up. Or this person's not going to show up. Well, that makes it hard. And it gets frustrating mm-hmm. for us when we have this all planned out. And that's what the coaches go through with a game, is their game plans are with everybody there. If my best linebacker's in, my best quarterback situation is in, and then you're telling me he's not. Well, now, you know, I'm frustrated and I'm just taking it out on you. It's not a personal thing, but I think you bring up a good point, is that their livelihood is based on wins and losses. No matter what anybody says, it is. I mean, and for football, I mean, more than anything, probably.
Absolutely.
And so I'm bringing you the bad news of, oh, by the way, your guy's out for 2 weeks. You know, and sometimes it's the doctor says so, and other times it's like, coach, he can't play. I'm telling you right now, he can play. But he's gonna be a liability to your team.
Yeah.
You know, and you want that. And I've had situations where I not to spite the coach, but I said, okay, he can play, but watch him, and you're gonna see. I think it was an ankle sprain, and the X-rays were negative, so I went in and taped him up, but he was hobbling. Coach is finally, get him out of there. Well, we shouldn't have been in there in the first place. But I think as long as we, as the professionals, say, I understand your frustration, but I'm not working against you. I'm trying to help you, give you the information that, hey, get another kid ready because this guy's not going to be ready. And and I think when you step back and see it as that, and not just like what Jeremy said, was, you know, I'm not going to go into the mindset, this is the way it's going to be and you're going to accept it. It's a working relationship. And that just comes with time and experience.
Absolutely.
And
that's a big thing. I think the age difference, too, between the age difference between the coach and the trainer, vice versa, makes a big difference. Just what I've learned over the years. I mean, I used to coach before I did all this also, and being young as a coach, the parents and the other coaches and the athletic director were a little weary with me. And then now being a student trainer and talking to these, you know, older coaches, and they're exactly like what they always say. Well, when I was a kid, well, it's just different now. The culture is different. You know, the kids are treated differently. Parents are parenting differently. You know, everything's different, especially if we're talking about concussion protocols and all that stuff coming out. You know, it wasn't always about safety back, you know, then 20 plus years ago. It wasn't as important, and there wasn't as much talk about sports medicine. And so the older the coach, the harder it is to get them to understand where you're coming from, because they have their old school view of things and you have this new way coming in, especially, you know, someone my age and young and not even certified yet. I'm walking through all these new things and I'm going to have all this new knowledge, and trying to mix that with their old knowledge in a way has kind of been difficult, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. I think we can zero in, and granted, athletic trainers, I've been in the business as a licensed athletic trainer for 5 years now. And you know, Jeremy, you've been in a little bit longer, right? Just a little bit longer.
Yeah, this is my 11th year.
Okay. So there's different stages that we go through. And I think one of the most critical stages for an athletic trainer is that first job, because you come in and you've seen everybody else, you know, your head athletic trainer in college, maybe your athletic trainers that were over you in high school, and you've seen how they dealt with their relationships, and you've seen how bad it could be, and you come in and you're fired up, gung-ho, and you're just trying to do the best job you can do. And a lot of times that comes off as unapproachable, stuck in their ways. And athletic trainers, if there's any bit of advice that I can give them, is you don't have to come in with an iron fist. Granted, there will be times when you need to make a point clear, and there's ways to do that, but you don't have to come in there with an attitude that everybody is against you, that the coaches don't get it, that nobody knows how many hours you're putting in. Those things obviously go through a young athletic trainer, especially at their first job. But the biggest thing that I could encourage them to do is take a second. Get to know those that you're working with. You know, that crazy coach that you're just like, they're goofy as all get out. Find out why they're so goofy. You know, take a minute and sit down with them at lunch one day at a teacher luncheon or something. And it may be the funniest conversation of your life, but you at least build a little bit of relationship. They get to know you. You get to know them. And eventually it's going to get to a point where, I mean, think about your coaches you work with now. you know who the one is that is real uptight. You got to kind of step lightly around sometimes. And then you know the one that, hey, you know, we'll deal with it. They're good people. You know, we can roll with that. And if you can take some time, build that relationship, let people know where you're coming from. At the end of the day, hopefully, you know, that would make some of the difference in how you're able to approach things and how they approach you about those injuries or whatever the case may be. The young ones.
I got two things. One, Mike Hopper said you had headphones and a fanny pack, and that made me think, do you have any pictures? Because that'd be really cool to see. But then I want to get back to the question. I think you skirted around it. I really want to hear about a time where you fell, where you blew up. Because, you know, I mean, I can think about times where I'm on the sidelines and coach are saying, water, water, water. And I'm like, coach, turn around. The kids are already on the freaking field. Shut up. Quit yelling at my kids. And, you know, that's not appropriate. It doesn't fit in it.
Okay, so I sit here and I paint a picture of we need to have relationships and we need to do this and that and the other. Mind you, there are times that call for, you know, just as much as a coach. Maybe sometimes, and we speak about football more predominantly than anything else, but a coach, when their kid comes off the field, they're going to let them have it. You know, they're going to let them know you're better than that, so on and so forth. Perfect point in case. I'm glad you brought it up. We had a situation my first year at Klein. And obviously, my head coach and I have already built a relationship. I mean, the day I interviewed, he had a bag of duck decoys in his office, and I was walking out of the interview, and I said, you duck hunt? He said, yeah, man, I duck hunt all the time. I said, man, I love duck hunting. I duck hunt all the time, too. And that was the moment we clicked. I mean, we were boys from then on, you know, and we've had a great friendship. But we ended up, we're actually over at Spring, and it's a Friday night, and I'm glad I'm telling the story because there's part of it that rings true to my coaching part of me. Our center and the starting guy, he was also our deep snapper for punt, he got held up at the locker room getting retaped by our other athletic trainer. She told the position coach that, hey, we have so-and-so over here. We're going to retape him. He's going to be fine to go back in. He's going to be a little bit gimpy, but he can probably get it done. But he's going to miss his first series when come out from halftime. And I knew it. She told me she had told somebody. And our head coach, who also coaches special teams himself, we come out. Offensive coach told the OC that, hey, so-and-so's out. And so what do we do that series? We go 3-and-out. So now it comes time to punt. Well, the head coach is looking for his deep snapper. Never told the backup. And he's looking around, and he's like, where is so-and-so? He's yelling, coach, he's over there. Why didn't you tell me? And then here it goes. And, you know, I'm not going to repeat the conversation verbatim, but let's just say we got, for lack of a better word, sideways real quick. And I felt at that moment, you know, I felt that anger rise in me because some of the things that he was saying about do your job, you need to do a better job at this.
Oh.
Yeah, those things coming out. And at that moment, I felt like I had to stand my ground. Mm-hmm. This was not, coach, come on, you know I do my job, that type of deal. This was, hold up, I got to stand up for myself a little bit. Kind of like, you know, a little playground school fight, because essentially 90% of what these coaches do is all playground stuff. They're kids sometimes. And anyway, so I stood my ground. I stood up to them. And at that particular moment, I was so angry. I didn't care what was said. I didn't care how it was said, but he was going to know that it was not a lack of us doing our job. It was absolutely 100% a lack of communication between his coaches. And I told him, don't ever come at me saying I'm not getting my job done, because if there's anything I'm out here trying to do, it's to get that job done. And so this is back and forth on a Friday night on a sideline, and he goes his way, I go my way, and we were definitely not seeing eye to eye at that point. Once again, knowing where he's coming from, you know, and obviously it came down to his coaches. After the game, that particular kid, something had happened. We didn't have crutches that fit him or something, and I had to grab the gator and drive him to the bus on the back of the gator so he'd get up in the gator or up in the bus. And as I'm pulling away from the field, the head coach runs over and hops on the gator. So we drop the kid off, and then we're driving to put the gator back up, and that 2-minute ride, he basically put his arm around me and he said, coach, I wasn't trying to belittle you. I hope you understand the heat of the game, the heat of the moment. And I probably said some things I shouldn't have said. And I said, Coach, I probably was very disrespectful to a superior. And but at that moment, I felt like you had it all wrong and I needed to explain myself. Granted, yell, however that came out. And so we kind of squashed all that. And basically at the end of that conversation, he was like, I appreciate what y'all do. I understand where things went wrong. And that was from that relationship that we had already built. But the bigger point of it was I was able to tell him, Coach, I've been on a sideline on a Friday night. And I remember distinctly my first game as a defensive coordinator. And it was actually at the place we were playing the school. I actually played my first high school football game. So a real special place, Bishop, Texas. And that night, I got fired 3 times and hired 4 times. So I kept my job. But there were some situations that happened that night as a young coach that our head coach turned around. You're fired. Don't even come in Monday. I mean, he's fired up. And then we'll do something good. You know, we run the right blitz at the right time. And he'll turn, you know what? I'll see you Monday. And he's back and forth and serious as a heart attack. So I was able to tell my head coach at that moment, hey, I understand Friday nights. And we always had a rule on the coaching staff that Friday nights were sacred and whatever was said then was not carried beyond Friday night. And if it did needed to be discussed later, we had a closed door policy. You get behind closed doors, you absolutely hash it out, tell exactly 100% how you feel. But when we open that door, we're unified for the kids. And basically that was that closed door meeting and we came out unified for the kids. But that was a moment absolutely when stuff went bad and I had to let the coach know real quick. And it turned out for the better because I think once again, those bad situations build relationships. If you can come out of it, if both parties are in agreement that we're going to hash this out and then move on.
All right. So you're a pretty big talker. I don't talk all that much. And I think you're a pretty likable guy. I mean, I get along with you. Honestly, I wouldn't say I'm a very popular person. I work hard, I do my job, but I'm just not one of those people that attract like followers that attract people. Mm-hmm. And like you're talking about building the relationship with the coach, I don't sit around and BS. I'm not a very good, if I don't have something to say, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to just sit here and stare at you awkwardly because I'm trying to build a relationship with you.
Yeah.
You know? And think about it coming from my perspective. How am I going to, you know, if you hadn't have been duck hunting with that coach, how would that have changed that situation?
How would that? Well, and obviously, first and foremost, I've always been an extrovert. I have no problem, you know, mixed in with people and getting up in front of people and, you know, hey, Joe, they finally let you out of jail, man. You know, good to see you. You know, just jacking around with folks. That has never been an issue for me. I will tell you this. Marriage has been an awesome deal because my wife, and I'm not saying anything she won't tell you herself, she's an introvert. But we're both in the same setting. And there's been situations where she'll come home frustrated about a coaching situation that she's had to deal with. And I'm just kind of like, you know what? Hey, just handle it like this. Just, you know, get over it. You'll be all right. Not realizing that not everybody is like me. And so I've learned a lot, actually, where you come from. Maybe not introverts to a negative degree, but introverts that, hey, I'm just not that type of guy that walks in a room and just hugs everybody and starts the party.
Yeah.
I get that. Cause I married one. When we go to, you know, events or functions or a party or something, it was always, she called me, she said, you're being a butterfly again. And I'll float around the room, you know, being a social butterfly. She just kind of hangs back and keeps her circle tight. We're different and everybody's different, you know, to somebody that effect, some people may not be that way. And I get that. So how do you build those relationships? If you have a coach, and I know every situation is different. I know our head coach about once a day, he'll come sit down in our office for 15, 20 minutes. And we may not talk about anything, you know, anything important. He just may be talking about, you know, the basketball game and how bad it was or, you know, how good it was. Just nothing, everything and nothing at the same time. Those moments right there are where we build that little banter. I'm not having to do anything out of my comfort zone. Granted, I'm fortunate enough to have that. What do you do when you don't have that? And the best advice I can give is the only thing is be approachable in the sense of you have to get out of your comfort zone a little bit. And this is just people rules 101, I would say, is you do have to get out of your comfort zone. And just like I've explained to my wife is I'm not asking you to be a butterfly like me. I'm just saying perception will dictate your relationship sometimes. They perceive you as, you know, they're kind of weird. They're over there by themselves the whole time. They don't really say nothing. They look mad or something. What's going on? You know, that one day you just say, hey, coach, how you doing today? You're not really saying anything that you don't really believe in, or you're not being anything other than yourself. You're just stepping out a little bit and saying, hey, coach, how you doing today? And great questions that I always ask my coach, how's your wife? How's your family? How's your kids? Not saying a whole lot even above that. Let them share a little bit about themselves, so beyond the sports setting, they know you care. And that would be simple, even for an introvert, in my opinion, that you can – that it's not hard to say, hey, how's your family doing, coach? You doing good?
Yeah, I think when you hit on somebody's family, that's where you see them in a different light. Tell me about your kids.
Yeah.
Heard you guys had, your daughter – got a whatever award at the recital, whatever. I think that's how you hit home.
And you don't have to be that crazy outgoing, you know, and some people are, some people aren't, nothing against you. It's just when you stop and say, hey, coach, you know, you're doing well today, and it changes things. And that's people rules 101.
Yeah, and I've seen coaches that I couldn't deal with, I would never deal with in a game. I mean, just you fear them, but you get them out of the hallway and say, hey, how's your family? It's like you're talking to your best friend. Just watch their attitude change. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not working. Oh, let me tell you about my kid or my wife. She got this, whatever. And I think that's how a quick way to build, you know, a rapport with your coaches is just take them out of their environment and talk about duck hunting, you know, or new gun you got or whatever, and you find these people that you lock on with, and it's fun to see the difference.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head with the perception, because I'm a lot like you, Jeremy. I'm in the middle. Like, people think I'm outgoing when they know me, but I will not walk into a room and just talk to someone, you know. And it's funny because it's like my boyfriend is the exact opposite, so he does the same thing. He just floats.
He's a butterfly.
Yeah,
I get it.
And so but my mom always says, you know, like you said, you know, you look mad or you look this or you're not talking to people, and they perceive you as not wanting to build relationship. But on the opposite side, we can perceive the same thing. So you may walk past a coach in the hallway and think, why would he want to talk to me? Like, what if I annoy him by asking him a question? And I think about stuff like that, which sounds stupid, but that's just how it is. And so you kind of got to step out and just do it. And then, like you said, you know, you ask them one thing and then suddenly it's okay. But if you constantly just pass them in the hallway and don't talk ever, then the problem in a game situation, if something gets heated, they don't know anything about you and you don't know anything about them. So they're automatically going to take something personally because they're like, well, you're attacking me and you don't even know me. Like, you don't know anything about me. And, you know,
yeah,
I think it could come down to that. If, you know,
also realizing, and granted, we're probably the one population in the sports world that nobody really does this for us, but it's trying to find out, you know, where they're coming from. You know, I wouldn't say, I know at times everybody's got those two or three coaches that really, hey, how are you doing today? And they ask you that, and you're able to tell them, you know what, I'm a little bit wore out, but things will be all right, whatever. You're able to share with them, and you know they personally care about you. And I think every athletic trainer is fortunate enough, hopefully, to have at least one or two coaches on their staff that do that for you. And the majority of them, you know, they're in their own world. They're thinking about their own thing. But one of the things, this is a great moment to also highlight the coaching and the athletic training, is as a coach, even if you would have taken away my athletic training duties and even the other sports that I coach, that's still one heck of a schedule I put up with for 15 weeks. Granted, ours goes all year, but I don't see that as a you know, it shouldn't be a contest. Well, I put in more hours than you, coach. You shouldn't be tired.
I get so tired of that argument. It's not my problem.
Exactly.
It's not a contest.
It's not a contest. And athletic trainers, I think sometimes we have a chip on our shoulder, like, the coach is complaining, but they don't understand. I put in X number of hours in 3 days. You're right. I don't see it as a competition. I see it as, coach, man, I feel you. Well, we put in some hours this week. And so instead of you confronting them about, you don't work as hard as me, you're not, I'm the one that sacrifices the most, which a lot of young athletic trainers do. And I find myself even at times, like, nobody understands. And so that puts a chip on my shoulder. So when a coach talks about he's tired, I'm like, you know about it. And that creates division. Just step back, get out of feeling your pity party, and understand they're coming from a place of exhaustion as well. They haven't seen their kids in a few days. You know, there's a lot of relatable moments that we choose to turn into contests. I've worked more, you know, that type of deal. That's something also that you got to keep in mind. We're all up there working, and if everybody keeps one goal in mind, I know in the high school setting, I'm there for the kids, you know. And I'm there to do what's right by the kids the best way I can through my relationship with coaches, through my relationship with their teachers, with the kids themselves. I'm there to make it the best situation I can for the kids. And when you relate to coaches that way, it kind of changes things. You know, you're there for the kids. Yeah. I hope we answered your question. That was a long way around.
Yeah, no. I think it's definitely good stuff. So when you hosted the GHATS workshop last year, mm-hmm. Your cross-country or track coach, one of the things that he said to me that kind of stuck out was, I said, hey, thanks for being here, because he was doing a lot there at the workshop. Yes. And he said, you know, it's the least we can do. You know, they always take care of us. And to me, that says he's built a really good relationship, built really good rapport mm-hmm. with that coach. And honestly, I don't know that I've done that. Or maybe, my wife tells me this all the time. I expect too much, or I just don't see the big picture, because, you know, I want everything to be perfect. And well, mm-hmm. just because the coach isn't telling me, hey, I think you're doing a great job, hey, I really appreciate having you here, doesn't mean that he doesn't. He just may not be expressing it, or at least I might not be hearing him express it in a way that, you know, communicates it to me.
Yes.
So what is, you know, obviously the relationship with that guy is pretty good, but
yes.
Do you have a relationship more or less like that with all of your coaches?
Most of them. I'll tell you the relationship with my head coach. This is a good one. So he comes up to me at practice one day, and 99% of the time, you know, I'm really not standing beside him talking to him. I realize he's out of practice. If he has something he wants to talk about, he can come see me. If he comes in the office, we talk. And then if I have just a pressing matter I need to talk to him about, I'll go up to him and talk to him about it. And if we end up shooting the breeze, we shoot the breeze. If we don't, we don't. We'll go up on about our business. It's not like every day, hey, man, how you doing? I love you. You know, we're awesome. We're friends. It's not like that at all in the sense of how we talk to each other every day. But this one day at practice, man, I'd been grinded out. It's spring. We just started spring football, just got done with the nightmare that is spring sports. And he calls me over, hey, McFarland, come here. So I'm walking over there. What's going on? He puts his arm around me and he says, has anybody told you you're doing a good job today? And I kind of swell up a little bit. I'm like, man, here it comes. And I was like, nah, coach, I hadn't heard it yet. And as I say, what? He says, well, I guess you need to try harder tomorrow. Pats me on the back, sends me on my way. That moment, you know, they say there's a little bit of truth in every joke. I don't know if he was being truthful or not, but that's that moment where, you know, he's joking around with me, but he's also, you know, making a good point of, hey, pick it up a little bit. I don't know if I was not doing my job or whatever. But I think about situations like that, and you know, with him, obviously I have that relationship. And to answer your question about how does it work with other coaches, first and foremost, Coach Kuntz is the guy you're talking about. He was our cross-country and track coach. The thing about Coach Kuntz was he would come in every morning, sometimes it was annoying because I'm trying to get things done, but after they would come off the track in the morning, he would stop in and drink his cup of coffee in our office. So we shared life. I mean, we shared life every day. Matter of fact, he's one of the biggest proponents in my wife and I buying a house last year. And that's just that life sharing that we did every day. Him and I are a lot alike. We're both the butterflies. You know, we're both loud, outgoing, and we would get along with each other. He would come in some days and put his elbow right in my back and start rubbing it in there. And I'm like, God, what are you doing? You know, he's like, you look stressed. And so on his end, he brought some of that in there. And I would say with all my coaches, they know who I am at this point, 4 years into it. They know who I am, and they know who my partner is, and they know how we work, and we work together. So there's nobody that we really get sideways with. My first year, though, when I was at Klein, it wasn't that way. It was the volleyball coach and I didn't see eye to eye, and so we never talked. That was something that, you know, we kind of got sideways over an issue, and it didn't bother me if she didn't talk to me. You know, I'm there for the kids. I understand that. But now, having been there 4 years, we do their CPR every year. We see all the coaches. We built the relationships, and relationships take time. Young athletic trainers need to listen to this. You're not going to come in your first year and have it exactly the way you want it, because I'll tell you right now, my first year at Klein was not exactly the way I wanted it, especially with the relationship with coaches. And I wondered if I would ever get to that point. Here we are 4 years later, and we half the coaching staff's at my house two or three times in the spring. We're doing crawfish bowls. We're hanging out. But that's over time and from the relationships and the fact that, you know what, I haven't really met this coach yet. So I go sit down. I am so-and-so. You know, I know you're a coach here. And just try to share with them. But in general, I would say, yeah, at this point, I have the relationships with the coaches, but when I started out, it wasn't that way. There was a lot of work that went into it and getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. You know, and you got to understand on coaches, on their side of it too, there's a lot of coaches that don't get you, don't get what you do. They see you as the one that you know, sometimes hurts their season.
You're always bringing them bad news.
Every you know, our defensive coordinator for 2 years called me the Grim Reaper. He's like, yeah, you never come up to me with good news. So on that, I would come up to him and say, hey, stock market's on the way up. Did you hear about that? Gas prices are down. Did you hear about that? He said, why are you bugging me? And I said, well, look, you say I always bring you bad news, so I'm trying to bring you some good news. But you have those situations. But I think it all comes down to you don't understand each other. You don't take the time. And I know coaches sometimes aren't. Some coaches are like Coach Koontz that'll sit in your office and will not leave till their whole cup of coffee's gone. And then you have some coaches that are just about a million miles away and you feel like, I don't even know where they are. Don't sweat it, though. Don't sweat it. All that will come in time at the right time. Some you may get along with better than others. It's kind of how it goes.
I think kind of the same thing. Like just recently, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I've had some kids after school, they'll just come and hang out. They're, mm-hmm. you know, maybe waiting for practice, or maybe they're done with practice, or, you know, they're done with their season. And so they'll just come and kind of hang out in the training room. And normally I don't encourage that, but I'm thinking if I'm building relationships and they're wanting to come hang out with me, they're more likely to tell me if there's something wrong. But even at that, when they leave, there's going to be an impact. And so, you know, I stop what I'm doing because, yes, there are lots of physicals to enter. There's lots of work to do for recruiting new student athletic trainers, lots of, I don't know, Twitter to look at.
Everything, yeah.
And so it's easy for me to just sit there and look at the computer while they're just sitting on the tables behind me. But if I just stop and say, you know, hey, how are you doing? You know, now I know one of my girls isn't going to play one sport next year because, you know, her grades are suffering and she's got this and this and that. And, you know, just sharing the life. I'm not the quickest to learn things,
mm-hmm.
but I think finally after this time, I'm realizing, hey, stop what you're doing. Pay attention to them. They're more important than whatever you're doing on the computer. Even if they're just annoying you, well, maybe they don't have anybody to talk to at home. Maybe that's why they're still here.
Yeah.
And so like you're saying, just taking some time, ask them about life, ask them about family. I'm not that good at it with adults, I think. And maybe it's because I haven't made myself available or accessible. Sometimes
you can't, though.
Yeah.
You're drowning in work.
See, and then there goes again, am I expecting too much? Am I just have this grand view in my head?
Schedule conflicts, because when's a coach most free? Right before or right after the game, when everything's kind of running. Well, that's when you're most busy.
Yes.
Your off time's the game. Walk around, and then you want to, you know, you want to have a chat or conversation. They're like, leave me alone. I got to, you know. So I think that's part of it too, is there may be a little conflict of when you can sit down. It may be in the morning, they bring in their cup of coffee. Well, you said yourself that you're running around doing treatments or whatever. And if you blow them off, you know, they may take that as an affront that, well, he didn't like when I come in and talk to him. He didn't like me. What's going on? But it's just, you know, can you find that time? And I've done the same thing. When I was head athletic trainer and instructor, as soon as I was out of class, I had to get over to basketball or whatever. So I couldn't stay and talk to the students, or if I'd leave the hallway. So I was, you know, was always in a hurry. Well, now without just being in education, you have that time to, I've told the students many times, just come in and talk, you know, if you have a question, sit down and talk. You don't have to just send me an email.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for them because I think they still look at it as, oh, I'm bugging him or whatever. And I see their point, but I remember when I was in the clinical side, it's just you go from one thing to the next, you know, and the faculty would go home at 3:00 and I'm looking at 7 more hours in the midday and everything. So I know what you mean, is you just, you know, finding that time to sit down, but you have to work it out with the schedule as well. So, but I do absolutely have a question. I want to know, because you bring an interesting perspective. You were a football coach, athletic trainer. Now you're at a large high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and busy, and there's more pressure and you've been in a small school. So from an education side, what did you learn on the job that you wished you had more exposure to in your education or in a student's education? Is there anything that
are we now we're opening a can of worms, right? Because this is
we only got an hour. Yeah.
Well, and this is the proverbial, and that's what I wondered if where this would go, but We come back to the hot button issues that are for every athletic trainer. Number one, you know, we always come to salary and hours. That's a huge issue, and we could spend a whole day on that. My personal perspective is it comes from the top, and the top has to be more active in doing that. And then from the bottom, you know, we have to let them know that's what we need. But when you come down to the education perspective and what I wish I would have learned and all that, I was fortunate enough being at Texas A&M Kingsville to I learned real quick that we did everything. And I've changed the lights on the shot clock. I've rewired the scores table. My first job at A&M Kingsville was to come up on a Saturday, no football practice, nothing, in August, Saturday in August, meet at the stadium at 7 a.m. We drive down to the ranch where they have our mascot. Of course, we're the Javelinas. So they've got a javelina. And our job was to rebuild Porky, that was his name, rebuild the pen. And with that, we built Porky a kidney-shaped concrete spa. And this is something that and I'd never been, of course, I didn't have an athletic trainer in high school. So when I went down there to Kingsville, of course, my mind was wide open. I didn't know where this was going. I kind of thought, well, yeah, athletic trainers, we do it all, right? And so that was my first job, to build our mascot, a pen with a kidney-shaped spa. And at that moment, that kind of set the tone that whatever, whenever, we're going to get it done. So I was fortunate enough to learn a lot of those work ethic things, and you may be asked to do some stuff that you don't want to do. Also in that also set me up for coaching 5 sports. And because I also took that to an extreme. Well, this is what we do. We do everything. Mm-hmm. We have to, or it won't get done and the world's going to collapse. Yep. But if there was anything I wish I would have learned more in the college setting, obviously for me, probably not as much of an issue, but social skills and the right way to handle disputes, the right way, even, like Jeremy had mentioned, maybe more of an introvert, how do I create those relationships? What are the keys to success relationally with your coaches? Obviously, the other part would be that they don't teach us about all the other stuff that pops up as far as, what happens when a water board breaks down, and you can't get a hold of anybody in maintenance, or you don't want to wait 3 weeks for maintenance. You got to learn how to fix that. And I was fortunate enough at Kingsville that I learned a lot of those hands-on skills. But a lot of athletic trainers I know, they're stuck sometimes when it comes to those real-life, quote-unquote, real-life situations. How do you teach that, though? How do you provide a curriculum for real life? I think things like the sports medicine blog, and one of the best ones that I watched was What I Wish I Would Have Known. And you get them guys up here and they're just saying, hey, this is some stuff I've run into in my 10, 20, 30 year career that I wish I would have known. But how do you teach that?
Right. You don't. I think this very topic, relationship building, is huge, but that's something you learn in undergrad, hopefully in some psychology class and everything, but you get type A personalities in the coaching world. Mm-hmm. And I'm introverted. I don't like, I've been told I don't like conflict. Well, of course I don't. Normally anybody likes conflict, but it's going to come.
Yeah.
And how do you handle that? And you diffuse it. And my method was to diffuse it as fast as possible. I've never had the actual blow up. I've had some situations where I was about to get there, but it was more of me like, this isn't my area. I'm not comfortable in a shouting match. I'll say something stupid. Some people might thrive in those, and they get the upper hand, but it's just, how do you can't teach it. You just have to teach the student how to handle it the best way to make sure that, you don't ruin relationships and that kind of thing. But
well, and you're a student, right? Mm-hmm. You're okay. So you're a student. And the thing I would tell you as a student athletic trainer in the college setting is look for things like this. Look for things that are guys that have been in the business. Look from those above you, your head athletic trainers and the doctors and the people above you, and spend a little time with them. Just seeing how they handle the coaches and things like that. I've learned a lot from our team doctor, Dr. Rand, just how he handles coaches and parents and things like that. And of course, I've been in the business 5 years, always keep learning, but watch those people and how they interact with people around them and take that. If you see it's a good outcome, maybe the team doctor has to tell a parent that we're concerned about a concussion. We're not sure yet, but I'm going to hold your kid out anyways. Even the parent goes crazy, loses their mind. I've seen how the team doctor can diffuse that situation. I put that in my memory bank and say, hey, future reference, when you come to this situation, this is how he did it, and it worked out well. Try it. That's something, real life experiences, expose yourself to things like the sports medicine blog and really spend time
sports
with the people
medicine
who
have broadcast.
Been sports medicine broadcast. I apologize. I'm fired.
It's all good. It's all good.
I'm never coming back.
Well, it's important to seek out those opportunities and want to help, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe we worked Monday through Friday all day, every day, and Saturday, you know, just this past Sunday, we helped with the Houston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a great experience, but, you know, I had to get up at 3:45 a.m., and then I had to drag my, you know, butt down there and park and walk and do all this stuff, and it wasn't really even my job. It wasn't, I mean, it was mandatory, but, and we had a lot of fun, and we had a lot of experience, but, you know, sometimes it's easy to just say, well, I'm just going to stay in bed and I'm not going to go out and seek that opportunity, or I'm not going to go. And, you know, we met doctors and EMS people and all these, you know, connections that you have, and you're watching them and how they interact, like just like
that's
you're saying.
Huge.
And, you know, it's a big deal to go and seek out those opportunities you're not given or that you are given, and like run after that and make your own, you know, opportunities and make your own learning experiences.
Would
and,
you say there's a, at any point in time that you can recall, like a moment seeing how somebody above you dealt with a relationship issue, maybe with a coach or with an athlete, and how that sticks out in your mind? Hey, maybe in the future I need to do that. Have you ever had a situation like that?
Well, I would say the biggest one that just sticks out is, you know, our head athletic trainer at U of H. I mean, he's been there. He's been in the business for 50 years now as an athletic trainer.
A lot of knowledge.
Yeah, and he's been at U of H for, I believe, you know, 20 to 25 of that. And he just, he gets involved, and he gets emotional. It's kind of funny, like before every football, after like the Thursday night before or Thursday before every football game, or Friday, they do like a walkthrough, and then he does this little speech. And a lot of times, like, he gets emotional and kind of tears up. And the good part of that is they're so connected with him, the coaches and the athletes and everyone, that, you know, he's just in there with them. He's mm-hmm. living their life with them. And sometimes it gets a little crazy. You know, he's running on the sidelines screaming that we're not winning and we need to win, or or the opposite. It's there. He's funny to watch. But I think what I've learned from him is just, you know, he's constantly, you know, involved in the, you know, what goes on. It's, I mean, he's the head football, so it's mostly just with football. But, you know, when I walk by, when I was working with baseball, well, Sarah, how's the baseball team doing? You know, what's going on over there? You know, I heard y'all won last night, or y'all didn't win last night. What happened? You know, and I just think he keeps that relationship with his athletic training students, with the coaches, with everyone that walks in that door, and they know his rules, and they know what they can and can't mm-hmm. do. And, you know, they know that they're going to get yelled at if they're a football player and they walk in that front door. Like, they'll get sent out. You know, they got to go in the other way. But I just think he's gained so much respect because of that relationship he's kept up.
I think that comes from, obviously, 50 years in the business.
Obviously.
Being at U
yes,
of H for
of
however
course.
Long, you know, he's been there. But when you go into a setting, obviously, when you graduate and you get your first job, you're going to hold on to some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes things. You know what? I may not know everybody. I mean, and let's make a disclaimer right now, and I think everybody will agree with this. You know, we're not writing the book on it here. We're just trying mm-hmm. to share with you life. We're just trying to show you life. And some things that we've done in some situation we've run into, but not every, you're not going to get along with everybody.
Right.
That's one of the hardest things
every
I've had
job,
to learn.
You're going to have one person at least that, no matter where you go, I've noticed at least one.
At least. There's going to be somebody. And I know personally that was something I struggled with. I have the somewhat in me a people pleaser attitude. And so when people weren't happy, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Why can't I? And so I had to get to a point where their happiness didn't dictate my happiness. And the fact that I'm going to bring it my way every day, then whatever is the situation on their end, you know, whether it works out or whether it doesn't, I've still got to bring it because we're here for the kids. And I think things like that, sitting around, you know, guys that have been in the business for that long, and one day you're going to go down the road and say, hey, I worked at U of H, and next thing you're going to, oh, so-and-so, and they're going to know what type of breed of athletic trainer you are, where you're coming from.
Right.
That may even, you know, help in situations down the road. We're you, chasing rabbits, man. I'm sorry.
No, we're good. Sarah, you said that the marathon was mandatory.
We wanted him to
get some experience in a large mass setting and where they could just athletes filing
in. So in the thing that they sent out saying we want y'all here, did they say you need to smile? So if you look at the U of H Masters of Athletic Training Facebook page, everybody in there is looking happy, you know, smiling, and then Dr. Knobloch
is mad.
I told him it's gonna be like an epic meme after that.
I got a text from Nicole, one of the students, and she was like, Dr. Knobloch looks mad.
Grad assistants commented on that photo, and I didn't know it at the time. They must have took four. I thought I was doing my work smile, which is a little corner of my mouth.
Did he have his arms folded too? I feel like he was doing like this.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe that was another
kind of like leaning forward.
I was leaning in. I don't. You know what? If this is the worst thing I did that day, I'm in good shape.
I think that's a great point of what we're talking about here, because in my situation, I would have said, you know, hey doc, did they mess up your Starbucks order that morning? What's going on, man? Is there anything I can do for you? And I think that applies greatly to what we're talking about here. You see that coach off by themselves, grumpy. You know, hey man, what's up? They mess up your McDonald's this morning. You know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And sometimes it comes down to, man, you know, I was up all night, baby was sick, whatever. Hey coach, all right, cool, man. I understand. I just, you know, I'm here for you, man.
Yeah.
That one little thing. Takes we're going from never seeing eye to eye, yelling at each other, to maybe I kind of get this.
Yeah.
Starts making the
connection. And I think because this in athletics, you don't have, I mean, you do, but you don't have days off. You're in Saturdays.
Yeah.
So if you have a baby that's up or a coach that's up with a baby, go talk to them. They need connection, you know, some kind of, they're up, they didn't sleep, now I have to come to work and watch film. Just go in there and say, hey, man, let me tell you what my kid did last week. I know what you're going through.
Exactly.
And that's a relationship builder instantly. You know, I mean, it is. Just tell them, hey, I know what you're going through. And it sucks. It's not, don't worry about it. It's like, it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, so when we were waiting for you to get here, Robbie.
Are you saying I was late?
We're waiting for you and
thanks
Sarah.
Thanks for telling the world I was late.
Oh, I was late too, apparently.
No. We started at 11.
I'm playing, don't do that.
You weren't late. You were just right.
I was
right
on time, which means you were late, right? Okay.
Whatever. Either way. So anyways, actually, saying, hey, how's your family? He did that. He said, hey, how's your son? You know, because we've had several conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm not the extreme talker, and I don't think Dr. Knobloch is the extreme talker. And so he just did that. He said, hey, how's your baby doing? Is he sleeping? Well, you know, ours isn't either. So just that exact conversation that we're saying, like, and then that builds a relationship, and then, you know, we're communicating it, and, you know, had y'all not shown up, then we probably would have continued that conversation and shared more of what's going on.
Let me just ask you this to make a point here. How'd that make you feel? Not without, I don't need you to start crying or anything. how'd that make you feel, just honestly? What'd it do for you?
I mean, it just makes you, like you said, feel valued, because he's remembering my family. He's asking, you know, about,
boom.
Even even if he doesn't remember, you know, Gideon's name, which I apologize. I know you've told me multiple times I don't remember your kids' names, and I think maybe it's just going to be
out. I'm out. I can't believe it. How could you
what's
not remember?
That?
I'm never coming back.
So, you know, but the thing is, he remembers and he asks about it, and it does. It's like, oh, yeah, hey, and then it begins the conversation, and we talk about other things and, you know, whatever it is. So
I mean, you've hit it on with your duck hunter, and it's a connection two of you have. I mean, when we leave, I'll probably ask you about hunting. I'm a big hunter, you know.
Okay.
And so he's got two young. I got a young one, you know. And you find a coach that you, when you sit down and chat with him, talk to him for 10 minutes, you're gonna find something that clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new car. Oh yeah, I got to get a new car too. Where'd you go? What'd you find? What do you like? Which you Ford? You a Chevy guy? Whatever. And I think that's important, because it takes them from my view of them and their view of me. It takes it out of it's work all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're a person too. You have concerns, you have problems, you have things that I can relate to. And I think that's tremendous at your first job, especially, because then you build experience, you know, you calm down, but your first job, if you go in there and I'm going to be the best athletic trainer, I'm going to work from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. and I'm going to, you know, my kids will never get hurt. It's just, you're a robot and you're not a person. And you want to build that relationship. And I loved having coaches come in the mornings and sit down and chat. I mean, mm-hmm. that was the best part of my day. You know, practice happens and kids get hurt and everything. But when a coach comes in, I was making class notes or I was doing injury reports. I loved being interrupted to have somebody just come out and chat. It was just fun. How was your weekend? And then maybe, you know, how's the team doing? But I didn't want to focus on the team. It was more like, do you feel good about them? How do you think we'll go for it? And, you know, I don't want it to get into, well, I got no second baseman. I didn't want to take it there. Just a personal, you know, are you excited about, you know, whatever, the road trip coming up? Is your, you know, that was to me always my favorite part of the day, just because you got to see them as a person and they got to talk to you as a person. You got to talk about your kids or your hunting trip, how bad mm-hmm. it was or how good it was. You know, that was always fun because you saw them. It wasn't always just work mentality. I think those are good situations to be in. And then, you know, if you're in a situation where I never could stand, you know, what are you doing sitting down? There's work to be done. Come on. Seriously, just give me a break. You can sit down, you can have a 5-minute conversation. You shouldn't get fired over something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, believe it or not, work life will go on if you're working 100% of the time or you're working 80% of the time and socializing the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. But you build relationships, and I think that's huge.
What about I don't know if you got another question. I had a open question here, something that popped in my head. Obviously, we've hit on the new stepping in first year athletic trainer. What about the athletic trainer who's been in the business and finds their job position, you know, stale? They find their relationships around them going stale, and out of that, what we would call probably the burnout area. Obviously, when we get tired, when we get hungry, when we get worn out, that's when our worst comes out. And a lot of times that's how coaches get us. And unfortunately, that dictates the relationship from
that
point on.
So real quick, Doc, yeah. I'm not saying that you're stale or burnout, but if you're in there listening, will you come in here and then you can kind of answer this question? Because he is, you know, he's been here at Pasadena for 30-something years, and so mm-hmm. he may be able to answer your question better. Because I've only been in here for
I can sort of answer that because okay. I got burnout and I was only in it for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, and this was college, so I didn't work near as many hours as you do. And that's why my respect for you guys is so high, because I don't know how you do it. But I was head athletic trainer, instructor, had 10 to 12 students, one or two GAs, and the teaching load was 9 to 12 hours. So it was just all day, every day. And so after 6 years that I started thinking, you know, I really want to go back to school. But what I noticed was I stopped getting excited at new injuries, and I started getting frustrated because it was more of, it used to be, oh, tear an ACL. Now I get to use my knowledge on rehab and everything. I get to do this. Now it's like, great. Now I'm going to be here longer every day.
Yeah.
I've got to take him to the doctor for follow-ups. And I noticed that was one of the biggest things I noticed. And you've heard whenever it's not fun anymore, you need to get out. Well, mm-hmm. that was, to me, that would actually happen, is I noticed it wasn't fun anymore to do the athletic training side. Now, teaching wasn't a big deal because my class notes were all electronic and they were already made. So I just literally went in and taught, and I enjoyed that. And that actually helped me decide I knew I wanted to go back to school. But I remember specifically was injuries were more of a frustration because it was more of, in exactly what you said, I'm burnt out. So now here's my day's longer now. Oh, I already hate long days. Now I've got an injury. I remember many times probably 3 or 4 times driving home and something happened. I get a call on my cell phone. You're thinking you're going home to sit down, eat dinner, watch TV. Nope. You're going back to work for 2 hours. And then mm-hmm. the ones that really got under my skin were the kids that did something on a Friday night on their own. Out, because this is college, so they're they're not around their parents and their families. They're there. They may have been recruited from New York, and we had a standing policy that if there was an injury, the head athletic trainer the athletic trainer training staff saw them. So we'd have people that were inebriated, fell off a curb, rolled their ankle.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We had coaches that I remember. He was such a good guy. I didn't mind it as much, but after a basketball game, no injuries. So you think you're going home? He had an inguinal hernia after the game. I had to go to the ER with him and sit for through 2 or 3 hours, and that stuff just started. I was already kind of borderline. And so when you say, how did your attitude, my attitude just, it actually made my job suffer because I didn't have the passion of, oh, I can't wait to here's our rehab plan. It was more like, okay, let's put ice on it, you know, or even the active ones is more like, well, we'll let nature take its course. You know, rest is best for you. I found myself more falling into that. And that was the exact opposite of what you need. You need to be doing the most aggressive, evidence-based practice stuff out there. And I was more of, I sit, you know, we'll do a little stretching. Yeah. One of the students can stretch you. And it really, I mean, I remember it was an epiphany. It was really, I remember in January, it was one of the basketball trip. And I just remember thinking, finally, I get a break. It was, you know, you're not in the training room and all the track athletes and volleyball's coming in, and we didn't have football, so it wasn't near as bad. But I just remember a basketball trip was like a vacation for me. I only had 13 kids to deal with. And it's like, that's not the right attitude to have, is you want to get away from the athletes. That's terrible. And it was literally a month later, I put in my application to grad school and ended up getting in. and then kind of weighed my options. But it was exactly what you said, is that's when I knew that it wasn't the coach's relationship. I didn't really change there. It was more of my relationship to the kids, and that's horrible. I just didn't have a passion to do my job the way I used to. So
I think that happens everywhere. I mean, that's kind of how I got into athletic training, actually. I graduated college and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a sport management degree and I could have done a million things, but I went and started to teach. And I only taught for 2 years before I knew that was not what I wanted to do at all, at least not full time. And I coached basketball and I helped with the football training and I did the training room stuff. And I realized that I was most excited to get to football practice every day when it was football season, or basketball practice when it was basketball season. And I realized then, okay, well, obviously, even though it's only been a year and a half, and my mom is the principal and she's the one that hired me. And I remember going to dinner one night and just burst into tears, like sobbing, like saying, I can't do this anymore. Like, I was so upset. I wasn't depressed, but I was just like, I wasn't happy at all with what was going on. And like he said, I think you come to a realization of what's going on, and you need to get out. You need to find what you really want to do. And so, if you happen to be in athletic training and you start to get burnout, Dr. Knobloch is still involved in athletic training, but he's teaching and researching and doing that side of it rather than being on the field. And maybe that's what he was supposed to do all along. And so I think you find what you're supposed to do. And, I think making that switch from teaching and what I was doing before to then going back to athletic training, by the time I get out and get certified, finally, I'm going to be 29 years old. I'm 27 right now and I'm still in school and it's crazy.
You've got your life ahead of you.
But
you're okay.
And I know that, but it took a long time to get here. Here's a little perspective for you.
I count this up. If you counted all the school I went to after high school, I was in school for 13 and a half years.
After high school?
After high school.
Wow. This is Van Wilder.
So that's pretty bad. So when you talk about 29, hey, I've been there, but
I'll be eight years after.
I worked clinically for 7.5 years. Wow. But when you look at left, in terms of undergrad, master's, doctorate, and then post, it's just like, it wasn't as bad because it wasn't continuous. Yeah. But
right. There's hope. Well, and the 2 years in between my undergrad and master's was huge for me. Like I think it made all the difference in going back to school because I was ready to go back. I was ready to learn. Yeah.
And I think that's a big perspective. Some people go straight through, others want to work.
The real world experience I got in between was probably the best thing I could have done.
Yeah. And it will. And just tying back in what we're talking about, relationships, these burnout situations, they're real. We go through them and there's nothing wrong with going through them because at times, one thing I've learned is it's an ebb and flow. In the heat of football season, I'm just burnt out, but I keep telling myself there's going to be a day when you're going to be sitting at this desk and you're going to be twiddling your thumbs because it happens.
Or you're going to be in a duck blind.
Or I'm going
to because this job allows you to be in a duck blind.
Exactly. Over Christmas break. Thank you, UIL, mandatory 5 days. But the whole point of kind of just tying this in with the coach athletic trainer relationship is, you're going to be at the bottom of the barrel one day. It's going to happen. It happens to all of us. Keeping your perspective right helps. Sometimes it's hard to see the forest for the trees. But when it comes to the relationships, and obviously we're talking about more importantly with the coaches right now, is how do you still try to make an effort when you don't have any effort to give? And I think the biggest thing is sometimes you got to fake it till you make it. And we tell our athletes this all the time. You may not feel like being here this morning, but, give me a little bit of effort. It'll all come around. And so if you make a little effort, you may be at the bottom of the barrel, dog tired, and you're just sitting there waiting for somebody to ask you how you're doing. And and you're just like, man, I wish somebody would pick me up now.
They can see it on your face. Don't ask him how he's doing.
Well, yeah, that comes out of it too. But, one thing that I've always made it a point of, no matter how bad I feel, find somebody that I can reach out to that day for whatever case it may be. And so when I reach out to them, hey, how you doing today? Whatever the case is. And eventually it comes back around, how you doing today? Well, I'm pretty burnt out. Just from my effort to try to take care of somebody else, it turns around that somebody ends up taking care of me. So don't sit there and wallow in it. Make an effort to take care of somebody else. It'll all come back around to you. You get what you give.
All right. I do want to go back to – this is way back in that conversation. The coach, after you blew up on the sidelines, you were yelling at your head coach. Your head coach was yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
You take the kid on the gator to the bus, mm-hmm. the coach hops on that gator, and after you drop the kid off, he puts his arm around you.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that situation turned out if that coach hadn't got onto that gator, hadn't put his arm around you, and hadn't said, I'm sorry? How do you think you would have handled that? How do you think that would have turned out the next day when you went for treatments?
I'm going to make a statement here, and if y'all disagree, I'm always open to hearing people's side of how they feel about sometimes the things I say. Because I care about that, and I care about input, and sometimes I fly off the handle and I say things. But this is how I handle things. If I am sideways with somebody, my ultimate, number one, if this is with my wife, if this is with a student, if this is with another coach, this is my policy. I address it now. Mm-hmm. Granted, there's sometimes when you got to let a cool off period. I've also learned that with my wife.
Yep.
Maybe she don't want to talk right now, dude. Just chill. But I don't want to let it go. Shout out Frozen.
It was in my mind too.
Exactly. Right? I knew everybody was thinking it.
I heard it.
Don't that night. So let's take that night in perspective. Robbie McFarland, how would he handle it? This is what I learned when I was coaching, was you address it right there. You don't let it fester. You don't let it get to the point where you have time to gossip to everybody. Now everybody knows their input's all in it. No, that night, probably not that night, but that next morning, I would have walked into his office and said, Coach, we need to talk about last night. And I would have done it in a respectful way. I would have came in first and foremost from a perspective of apologizing for the way I handled it. Once again, going back to this point of you get what you give, and not all the time, but more times than not, apologizing to him in efforts that hopefully he'd be man enough to apologize back, and to just try to air it out there. Because I don't want to go on from that point, that one particular moment, dictating everything that we have to do from here on out. And I do this, I try to do this with every situation that becomes a conflict. I want to take care of it now. I want to do it respectfully and quietly. And if we can't do that now, we need to cool off. But we're not going to just let this go. Because I found out when you sweep things under the rug for so long, you're going to end up tripping on that pile of dirt under that rug. And then the dirt goes everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the longer you let it wait, the more feelings get involved from both sides.
Yeah.
Because then you start thinking through it. You're like, oh, well, I'm going to make a list now of everything that I think because, you know, he's given me time or she's given me time sometimes. And then you kind of come back and sometimes it becomes a lot bigger than just that situation, which can be positive.
I've also learned that the time factor, okay, obviously we just got done telling each other how we felt on the sideline. I wasn't going to approach him after that game.
Right.
And there's kind of a time factor involved. I agree with one point that you don't speak to somebody when you're still fuming angry.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself a second to get your mind right because there's going to be times when you say something that maybe you didn't intend to say. Obviously, we've all been there before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just take a second and make sure you're in your right mind. You're not being reactive, but you're being proactive and you're trying to make the situation better, not worse. And there's sometimes that we just feel like we have a right to say what we want to say to make us feel better. And I found out that hardly ever makes you feel any better just to fly off the handle and let somebody have it whichever way, left, right, up and down. And you walk out of there and the situation is still crappy and you end up feeling crappy. The only one I've ever seen that makes you feel better is when you address it respectfully and at the right time. And you may walk out of there and they may still be who they are, but it's off you.
Do you remember if you won the game that night? And the reason I ask is I'm wondering if you say you won, would his attitude have been this? Would he come up and put his arm around you had you won? Or if you did lose and he still did it, obviously it was pretty respectful of him or something noteworthy that he still did.
To be honest with you, I can't remember. But I think that makes another great point. Winning and losing ain't everything.
Right.
You know, regardless, win, loss. And this is something that I've thought many a time about our coaches. You are the biggest baby in the whole world. You're boo-hooing about injury. You go out here and tell the guys every day, suck it up, be a man, nah, nah, nah. And that's one of my biggest things from a coach that I always said, I will never tell a kid to do something that I'm not going to do myself. Mm-hmm. And you be a man, suck it up, life's going to happen, quit crying about it. And then all of a sudden you're crying because your kid's hurt. You're acting like a big baby because you lost.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you are not putting that out there for the kids the right way. You know, do the same thing you're asking them to do. You know what? Stuff happens, dude. Your guy got hurt. I'm sorry you're on your fourth string quarterback.
Profession. You expect mentally, you expect 22 players to be healthy in a sport where they're colliding full speed constantly all the time. And you can't, you have to have a contingency plan and you're the unfortunately one that brings them the bad news.
Yes.
Oh yeah, this guy's out. But yeah, I think that's exactly.
And there's
right.
a way to present that information as well. There's a way to present, Coach. I think you're kind of blowing this a little bit out of proportion. You just kind of got to get a feel for the situation.
Don't go into it with the mindset that everybody's going to be healthy at the end of the game. But when it happens, be appreciative. But don't get mad at
My
the athletic
thing,
trainer.
Hey, you love football, but football don't love you. Okay, it don't love nobody. It's the most unforgiving thing out there, and that's just how you're going to get treated. Okay.
All right. So I'll kind of close this up with the story. There was a time where we had a kid that was got spine boarded and taken to the hospital. Well, at the school, they happened to have two ambulances. So I was still standing there waiting for the ambulance to leave because I wasn't going to beat the ambulance there and wait for a kid. Well, they had taken the kid to the other ambulance, and then the coach turns around, "Why are you still here? What are you talking about? I told you to go to the hospital." Well, okay, his mom already went, but the ambulance is sitting right there. Well, you know, find out, then I leave, and then I end up getting lost. So the coach, after the game, gets, you know, his wife takes him to the hospital, and we actually get there at the same time. So then the next day, he comes and talks to our other athletic trainer and says something along the lines of, "Was Jeremy lying to me? Did he get lost? Why did he go home?" And I mean, Bill said that to me, and so I'm so ticked.
Mm-hmm.
If I had said something then, I probably wouldn't be here today. I would have had to find a different job. But you know, I talked to my wife about it the next day. I went in, and here's what I said. I said, "Coach, I need you to have the same conversation with me that you had with him." And that gave him an opportunity for me to hear it from him, for him to explain it.
Yes.
And then I said, "Well, this is what happened. Thank you." And then I walked out. And so, you know, instead of it being something huge where he was basically calling me a liar, or at least that's how I perceived it.
Yes.
Instead of it was just like, this is a misunderstanding, and, you know, we're fine. We're moving forward there. So it's really just taking the time factor, the perspective, understand where they're coming from. So I'm glad that it wasn't early in my career. I would have
exactly. One thing, if I could kind of just wrap up everything that I've said today, the one thing, if I can tell you anything, you get anything from what we've talked about today, do not be a reactive person when obviously we're reactive people as athletic trainers anyways. Okay, somebody goes down, we react, we know what to do, bam 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 bam. Do not get that twisted with relationships, because in relationships, whether it be with a coach, with a kid, whatever, being reactive does not allow you. And granted, our mindset is like that. We come by that honestly, don't we? That we're reactive to injuries. We're reactive to things happening. In relationships, being reactive generally stems from an emotional response. An emotional response, a lot of times, are not rational. And they do not allow us to, you know, filter, I guess, what we're fixing to do or say. And so I just encourage people, don't be as reactive in situations. Step back, be proactive, try to preserve the situation. And ultimately, your goal should always be to make the situation better, whether it be with the coach, whether it be with the kid. And I gotta thank one of my coaches right now, because it was after a Friday night, and I remember I had something on my mind about how something went during the game. And this is at Klein. I've been in the business, you know, almost 5 years now. This was this year. And I was not happy with the way a coach, wasn't even an injury, how he handled a play situation. And the coach in me was very upset. And I was upset with my head coach about how he was handling it. And I was tired of being around that. I was very upset, obviously stemming from the coach in me. And I hopped up out of my chair and I was walking down the hall, fixing to open the door and go to his office and say, "Look, if this is how you're going to run it, I don't want to be a part of it." And one of the other coaches grabbed me and he said, "Hey, man, I don't care if you need to tell him that, but just don't tell him that right now. You're upset." And I was being reactive. And at that moment, I kind of realized, hey, go back to what you do. And if you still need to talk about this in the morning, it still bothers you that much, you can. And so we ended up having a conversation about it later. He knew my heart. I knew his heart. And we were able to hash it out. Try not to be so reactive and don't take everything so personal. Mm-hmm. That's something, too. Trainers, hey, what did Aaron Rodgers say? Relax.
I don't know.
I've had many times I was guilted into thinking it was my fault the kids are still not playing. And I'm not going to tell the long story, but it came down to I'm not the one getting them hurt. They're not getting hurt in my drills. Mm-hmm. So you got them hurt, I'll do my best to get them back. But it was, why is he not ready? You know, what do we need to do? And it basically was like, man, am I not doing the right treatment? Or something? And it was just can't do that.
I would say my biggest point here is that we're going to fail, just as Sarah went to the marathon to learn, mm-hmm. to take in things from perspective, just learn from our mistakes, but understand you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to have these blow ups, these mess ups to really learn from it. But maybe we can soften that blow Maybe maybe you just say one cuss word at the coach instead of a whole string of them.
Yeah.
And then you turn around and say, I'm sorry, you walk away, and then you never know. You never know what will happen. So.
Exactly.
All right, so since you're a relationship expert, do you have any sort of favorite resources, books that, how to win friends and influence people or anything like that that you really refer people to? Or just the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com /.
Absolutely. That's where I learn everything from. Watch it every day. A lot of what I learned, just being honest, is a lot of my values that I've learned from church growing up. One of the books that obviously speaks most of my life would be the Bible. I mean, that's something that, on a side note completely, a lot of my relationships are molded around that. But I've also found in, regardless of how people may feel about that one way or the other, it's a great relationship book just for the simple fact that if you were to treat others the way you wanted to be treated, I mean, that's a pretty big point. Another thing that I read more than anything is I look at great leaders. I look at great coaches. I look at guys that just go through insurmountable things. For instance, Tony Dungy, one of my favorite books of all time right there. And it's Quiet Strength. And he talks about his son committing suicide and how he still leads a team to a Super Bowl championship and all these things. I mean, find people that are successful in high pressure situations. Read books about coaches. Read books about, other people in the business or doctors. Surround yourself with people that have been there, done that, been through things that you've never even been through, and absorb how they respond to that. And that kind of helps you become, obviously a leader. And then more importantly, leadership is relations. And if you can build great relationships, you can be a leader and you can serve people and take care of them.
All right. Excellent. That'll work. So G-Head, the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, just recently put on our great big workshop. But that's actually how I met Robbie, because we hosted it at Klein. Mm-hmm. And so, we had to work together some there. And then, it just works out. So being connected with your local organization as an athletic trainer is very cool, because you get to meet Robbie and, Mark and all of, or Dr. Knobloch and all of his students were there at the workshop. And it was a pretty cool experience. We had 1,100 kids.
Yeah.
A pretty massive undertaking, and the college group did a great job of teaching, so thanks for everything you guys did there teaching our kids.
Yes, thank you.
And hopefully in the future we'll get to do more.
I think that was great. I mean, I walked into, because I had a vested interest in seeing them present, so
yeah,
I walked in and they did a great job and the students seemed to be engaged, and I got feedback from some other athletic trainers and they really enjoyed it, so I think it'll be a good part, and it takes some of the load off of high school athletic trainers. I mean, I know some of you may want to do that, but at the same time, some may not. And it's like, hey, we have this group over here that will take that off our hands. So I think it's good for them as well. Yep. They may not know it at the time, but they will eventually.
Yeah, exactly. The more we can expose them to, the more, just the more opportunities you can just store up in your mind. So thanks for being a part of that, all of you. And G-Heads, again, sponsor the CEU opportunities. And again, we have 3 live viewers logged in. So afterwards, I'll put up the CEU certificate. You can fill out the evaluation. I'm going blank here. Fill out the evaluation, get the CEU certificate, and you can use that whenever you go to report your CEUs, because GHETS provides that for us. Again, our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where almost every single Wednesday we watch live. Next week we have Mike McKinney from Northeastern University, and then we'll be talking with Megan Jeffries. She's going to be talking about female athlete and social media. So again, links to all that stuff will be on the website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. On Twitter, I'm PHS Sports Med. Google+, it's Sports Medicine Broadcast. Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy,
Dr. Knobloch, Mark Knobloch,
Sarah Strickland,
and
Robbie McFarlane,
the rest of the sports medicine crew that left like an hour ago, that's a wrap.
More than an hour and a half.